Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdys have served the insurance needs of the Valley for decades. Personal insurance, commercial insurance, a wide range. And they'll find you the right insurance at the right price. That's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Here's a swing and a drive. Well hit right field, and this one's going to go. Galvis bangs one off the auxiliary scoreboard, hanging off the second deck. His second of the day. Back-to-back with Altair, and it's a half-dozen homers today for the Phillies. They lead 7-0.
Ended up the final 7-1 over San Diego. Scott Fransky with the call on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Former Williamsport cross-cutter Freddie Galvis with the home run yesterday. Current Williamsport cross-cutter Adam Haseley joins us. Eighth overall pick in the draft. Phillies first-round pick off to a great start with the Cutters after going through the GCL with complete ease. Adam, welcome to the show. Welcome to the area. It's great to have you with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Happy to be here.
All right, let's start with this, Adam. Your parents, I believe Dan and Mary Kay, I believe are their names, actually came out and finally had a chance to watch you play, and when they did, you homered.
They did. They came out Friday afternoon. They were there for Friday and Saturday, and it was actually my dad's birthday on Saturday. So it was just a cool couple days, and the first night that he was there, that homer happened.
I have to correct myself. I think his name is Rich. It's Rich and Mary Kay.
Yes, it is.
Hazel.
Rich.
And then some youngsters got the ball, and what did they do with it? Instead of keeping it, what did they do?
Yeah, I saw them after the game, and at first they wanted me to sign it or whatever, and then they told me that it was the actual home run ball. So I asked them if I could switch it out with one that I had in my locker, and they said yeah. And so I actually got to get the ball for myself, and then I ended up giving it to my dad, kind of like a birthday present.
It's a great birthday present. You pitched, and not only that, you were a really good pitcher with Virginia, ninth in the nation in ERA. Who was it that told you, though, that, you know what, if you play the field, that really is your path? Who told you that and why?
Well, I think it was a number of people. It was also kind of my decision, really. Playing the field is something that I've always really enjoyed doing, and I enjoyed pitching too, but I just, found more excitement and joy in just being able to play every day and getting to hit. And so that's really kind of what made the decision. Pitching had always been kind of secondary, and going into college, I didn't pitch my freshman year. And then my second and third year, I was able to pitch a little bit more. But, in the back of my mind, I always wanted to hit, if I ever got a chance to go into pro ball.
Yeah, well, you were only second in the ACC in ERA. You were eighth in wins, and you were ninth in the nation in ERA. So, obviously, that little dalliance in the pitching wasn't that bad.
I enjoyed it. I really did. It was something that, there's nothing really like it when you're in the game. And the only, I guess, drawback is all the kind of extra work you have to do for both pitching and hitting.
I want to ask you about the transition from college now to playing pro ball. What are some differences, not just in the game itself, but really even off the field? What are some of the differences between being a pro and in college?
I think the biggest thing, honestly, is just routines. And, if you can solidify a routine for yourself from day to day, then it's something that you can look forward to and rely on. And, college, you have different classes at different times and different events and things like that. And, pro ball is just kind of know what you're going to have the next day. And, You know, it's something that you can just rely on when you wake up, you know what your schedule is going to be.
15 players from this draft that you were in are now playing for Williamsport. Has this really been a bonding experience for the draft choices looking ahead down the road as a group together?
Yeah, it has. I got there a little bit late down in Clearwater after the draft, and you know, most of those guys came up here while I was still down in Clearwater. But, you know, when I came up here, they welcomed me back, and it's just been really cool to bond with them, like you said, and get to play these games with them. And, you know, I hope we can all just continue to move.
All right, now let's get to the going into Williamsport. As you know, they put $4 million into that ballpark. Those are Major League dugouts, Major League Baseball paid for the field that you're playing on, all part of this August 20th game between the Pirates and the Cardinals. What's been your impression of being there, and what do you think it means to the organization to have that kind of facility now?
The surface, I mean, it's just the first thing you can tell when you go play in the outfield is you know, amazing, and it's all level, and it's everything is just perfectly cut, and you know, it's just, I don't know, it's just a blessing to be able to play on, you know, that kind of surface. You know, and I wasn't here, and I didn't hear anything about the old surface or stadium, but I'm just really excited that, you know, I had the chance and the other guys had the chance to play on that kind of field.
All right, you go from one level to the next. Any adjustment from one level to the next for you? Anything that's just a little bit different here than you saw in the brief period of time you were in the GCL?
I think, you know, as you keep moving up, the pitching is going to get better and better, obviously. And, you know, arms are just going to be that much better, and guys can locate a little bit better. And the secondary stuff will be, you know, just a step above where, you know, you previously came from. And, you know, the hitting, too, and the fielding, too, is going to be, you know, better, and guys are going to be hitting the ball farther and faster. And I don't know. I think it's just something the guys are going to be older, and it's something you're going to have to adjust to.
Growing up, what other sports interested you?
Growing up, played basketball, played football a little bit, but it was mostly basketball and baseball growing up.
And then what finally just swung you to baseball, just how good you were at it, or was there something else?
I wasn't really good at basketball. It's pretty short, kind of small. so I think it was by default that I had to pick baseball.
Well, they couldn't make you the 6'1 point guard.
No. By that time, I was in the five somewhere.
In the fives ain't going to make it unless you're Muggsy Bogues. So.
Right.
So I make sure we know that. So when you finally got going at this thing, who were the influences on you that made a difference in teaching, maybe even made an outside influence on you as you came through this thing as you developed?
You know, I think it's a combination of coaches, college coaches at Virginia, Coach Kuhn, Coach McMullen, Coach Kirby, Coach Brian O'Connor. You know, I think those guys played an immense role in you know, helping me learn the game and mature in the game. And then, you know, I've had some mentors and some guys that have been really pouring into me from, you know, just a kind of a spiritual aspect too. I come from a faith-based home, and I think just a combination of those two things kind of set me up for, you know, be able to have success in college and, you know, being where I am now.
I was talking with Daniel Castano of State College the other day when I had him on the pregame show here, and same thing. He talked about faith-based and what it has meant for him. What has faith-based meant for you off the field, and what kind of influence is it, maybe even a calming influence on the field?
Off the field, I think it just sets me up as the man that I want to be, how I treat people, how I, you know, handle my family and, you know, the relations that I have off the field. And, you know, on the field too, it just kind of takes a little bit of the pressure off that, you know, I feel like I'm playing for a bigger purpose, and it's not just all about me. And it's, you know, I was given these abilities to, you know, kind of glorify the person that gave them to me. And, you know, that's just something that I kind of play in freedom with, that I have this ability, and now I just get to go play.
does it take the pressure off of being, hey, look, that's Adam Haseley. He's the first pick of the Phillies. Hey, that's Adam Haseley. He's the eighth overall pick in the draft. Has the faith part of it allowed you to put all that in perspective?
I think big picture it has. You know, there's going to be some obvious immediate attention of, you know, some of it that I didn't really even see coming. You know, I never really thought I'd be, you know, where I am today. And but in, you know, big picture wise, I think there's a long plan here, and you know, I'm just gonna continue to focus on myself and just try to keep things light and big picture.
All right. In college, obviously, you have a routine. You go to class, then there would be baseball in the afternoon. Could be a game, could be a practice. In the fall, there's fall baseball as well. Now, what's your routine as a professional? How do you spend that off time?
Are you speaking about the off season?
No, I'm talking about like now. I mean, I realize there's certain times, and this is an off day, but there are certain times, you know, where you have to be at the ballpark and so forth. But you're now out of the college routine, where instead of going to class, you've got to fill it with other things. How do you try to fill that extra time?
Well, I think there's just more time to do, you know, some hobbies and try to get away from baseball as much as you can. This morning, I actually went fishing with, you know, a couple guys. Austin Bastille was one of them. Just try to get away, you know, from the everyday grind of playing games. And so I think there's different things you do. You know, you just try to stay relaxed and you know, go to dinner with some guys or try to get away and go hiking or fishing or whatever you have to do. You know, some mornings or some days, you just got to get your mind off of the game.
So are you an outdoors guy?
A little bit, yeah. I, you know, grew up on a lake a little bit and close to a beach. So, you know, I enjoy the water, like fishing.
Okay, all right. So is it a secret spot you went to today? And if not, where was it? And did you catch anything?
We did not actually land a fish. We went fly fishing for the first time. But it was a little cold in the water. We didn't go at the best time, went at like 9. So, we didn't really plan it out too well, but, yeah, we went with actually, one of Austin's host parents', friends actually took us, and I really couldn't tell you where we went. It was off in a trail somewhere, and we were just lining up on a riverbank. So if we were to do it again, we probably should have done it at night. And when they were feeding, but it was all good.
Well, maybe at some point I got to get you hooked up with Joe Humphreys, one of the foremost fly fishermen in the country. He's here in State College. The long list of big names that have come out to fish with him, you'd love it. But that'll be for another time, another place.
There you go.
Okay, one final question. I'll let you go. As you move forward with this, where in the last period of time do you feel like you've improved your game? Where you feel like you're a little more comfortable? Where you feel like you're getting a little better? Where is that right now, and why?
Mental consistency, I think, is the best thing that I've been working on a lot in this spring, in the winter, and it's really been tested. I think, you know, just playing every day, it's tough to be locked in and focused every day, but I want to, you know, keep working at it, keep bringing my best, you know, mental focus I can each and every day. And, you know, I think if you do that, that's, you know, more than half the battle is just being locked in. So I'd say mental consistency.
I lied about the last question. This will be the last question. I was talking with Tim Frazier, who played last year with the New Orleans Pelicans in the NBA, and he was traded to the Washington Wizards a couple weeks ago. And he said, in going through the NBA schedule, he said one thing that really struck him was that all of a sudden you'd get to the middle of December, and you played 30-some-odd games and realized, that's how many games I played in college. I still got 50 games to go. Now, I realize in college baseball there's a 50-60-game schedule, but is there a grind to this everyday part that you as a young player have to get used to?
I think there's no doubt a grind to this thing, and I've only been doing it for 2 weeks, and, you know, some guys have been, you know, playing since March or whenever, you know, spring training had ended and the seasons had started, and it's every day. I mean, it's seriously every day. It's a grind. It's, you know, you can't take a day off, and It's much more of a grind than college is. You get a couple, you know, 3 or 4 days off a week. And it's, you know, something you can't really prepare for until you're in it. So it's something that I'm trying to get accustomed to and trying to get used to.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks so much on your off day for giving us your valuable time, Adam. I appreciate it. I wish you nothing but the best of luck, not only this summer, but as you make your way through the system.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Adam Haseley, Williamsport Crosscutters, the Phillies' first-round pick, eighth overall pick in the Major League Baseball draft. Tomorrow, Mitch Rupert's going to join us from the Williamsport Gazette. We'll talk with him about that as well. As you can tell, not only an outstanding baseball player, but you can tell what a class act he is, really. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us on the show today, and Adam Rittenberg in the final half hour. Tony Knopp on Wednesday. We'll have several topics to talk about. We'll bypass IndyCar. I know, deep down that sounded cruel, didn't it?
Yeah, but I can deal with that.
So can the audience. All right. So, thank you. Thank you very much. we have a lot to talk about. Big business. You've got 41 Major League Baseball players with no cap, with contracts that are $100 million guaranteed or better. 41. 41 players in Major League Baseball where there's no cap that have a guarantee of $100 million or better over the life of the contract. You know, Pujols, for example, his contract is, what, $240 over the lifetime of it. In the NBA, where you just saw, for example, James Harden get a $225 million contract extension, a lot of people think, all right, wow, oh yeah, look at the NBA, the explosion in salaries. Well, there are actually 14 NBA players with a guarantee of $100 million or better in their contracts. So in Major League Baseball, it's 41, no cap, remembering the NBA, there is a cap. Now, there's two parts to this cap, as a lot of people don't realize. There is a cap in the NBA at the upper end, but there's also a minimum cap. There's a minimum amount of money you have to spend. So there's a ceiling and a floor. But there's one point where the Sixers were so far under years ago, they had to be told, like, boom, kick it back up. But think of that, 41 players in Major League Baseball have a guarantee in their contracts of better than $100 million. You realize that? Now, the Home Run Derby is tonight. They're going to seed the players. So let me give you the seeding as to how it stacks up. Giancarlo Stanton of the Marlins, 26 home runs this year, 12.5 per at-bat, will face Gary Sanchez, 13 home runs this year, 16.5 per at-bat. Mike Moustakas of the Royals, Miguel Sano of the Twins go head-to-head. Moustakas is at 25 home runs, 12.4 per at-bat. And Sano is at 21 home runs, 14.3 per at-bat. Cody Bellinger, 25 home runs this year, is the 3 seed. He'll face from the Dodgers, 10.3 home runs per at-bat. Charlie Blackmon is at 20 home runs this year, 18.4 per at-bat. But you realize in the last, 5 years, maybe less than that, that Blackmon has more leadoff home runs than anybody else in baseball from the leadoff spot. And Blackman's with the Rockies. And then, of course, the number 2 seed is Aaron Judge. 30 home runs this year. A home run every 10 at-bats. Justin Bauer of the Marlins, 20 home runs this year. 13.5 at-bats per home run. Judge has 30 home runs at the All-Star break. Second most, Mark McGwire at 33 in 1987. Judge has 30 home runs, Yankee rookie record, Joe DiMaggio in 36 at 29, Joe Gordon in 1938 at 25. So we'll have Adam Rittenberg, and then we'll run down the quote-unquote combatants for tonight's Home Run Derby, which in some ways might be more intriguing than the All-Star Game. Max Scherzer starts for the National League tomorrow from the Washington Nationals. Chris Sale of the Red Sox will start for the American League. This show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury.
Four city blocks of new Ford trucks. Over 40,000 trucks sold. SMC is where you want to be. Sunbury Motors Ford has over 110 new Ford trucks. And during July, they'll include a complimentary accessory package with the purchase of any new F-150. Through July 31st, receive a tonneau cover, molded splash guards, and window deflectors at no additional charge. SMC is where you want to be because they have the largest selection of new Ford trucks in all of central Pennsylvania.
And that means the biggest savings.
Take up to $13,500 off on new F-150s. And SMC has them starting as low as $23,919. Save up to $7,000 on 2017 Ford Escapes. And they're slashed as low as $19,380. Explorers, Edges, and Expeditions have discounts up to $11,000. SMC is where you want to be in July for this mega summer spectacular sale and the complimentary F-150 accessory package. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
F-150 accessory package valued at $699. Excludes prior sales and ordered units.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
You have no idea at the moment how relieved we are, Sean and myself, to be back on the air.
It's great to be back.
We just went on a six-minute hostage situation. We had to hear about IndyCar. Some dude that went Dancing with the Stars, I guess, won a race last night. And they have to repave the entire state of Iowa. I don't know what that means.
That means he's back from vacation.
Yeah, well, why is he talking to us and not a client?
I know. Come on, you got 24 minutes left in your workday. Come on, chop chop. Make up from last week.
Yeah. I have one word I want to maybe might be a motivator for him. College. Here's a note. Tuition. Talking to us ain't going to pay that bill.
Come on. First half, 2017. Start strong, kid. Come on.
We'll make the Iowa Motor Speedway the sports bozo of the day because obviously it needs to be repaved.
If that's better than what you already had, cool.
Well, I just had to hear about every rut for the last 6 minutes. Right? And the difference between you and me is that you sat there and listened to the whole thing. I got up and left halfway through, came back.
Took one for the team.
You always do.
I know. Well, I'm a big target. I'm 6'2".
Yeah, you're also sitting there. Right. I mean, my goodness. Between you and Sammy, I don't know. It's just feel like we got to send in like a hostage negotiator and get you guys out. All right. Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com, joins us. Then we're going to get back to some of the numbers on the Home Run Derby. The Home Run Derby, try this out. The Home Run Derby gets actually higher ratings than the NBA semifinals. Not the final, but the NBA semifinals. The Home Run Derby 2 years ago had a 7.1 rating. 7.1. And the NBA semifinal of ESPN 2 years ago was like at a 6.8 or something like that. Home Run Derby 2 years ago, not last year, but 2 years ago, had a higher rating. Can you believe that?
Well, I'll definitely tune in tonight. I mean, I won't watch the whole thing. I'll keep tabs on Twitter, you know, who's still in it. And, you know, hopefully we'll have a Giancarlo, you know, Aaron Judge final tonight, depending on how they have the matchups going tonight.
Well, I mean, they're the 1 and 2 seeds, so the only way they can meet is in the final.
Yeah.
Man. The IndyCar Iowa race rating,
Point.
Well, no, I guess they did extensive polling across the country. I guess both viewers enjoyed it.
So what you're saying is one of them's in PA.
Yeah.
Not far from us.
And the other one was the spotter in Iowa.
The one who suggested to repave the track.
Yeah, repave the track. I'm telling you, we got to repave this thing. I mean, look at all, they're all bouncing up and down. All right, let's bring in Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com. Adam, about 10 days ago, you wrote an article I found to be very intriguing that said the door to the next round of realignment in college football, which then, of course, would work its way through every sport, might be 2023. What was the information that you received along the way that led you to some of those conclusions and take us down that road?
Yeah, you know, talking to people around the industry, you know, that date was brought up to me actually by a consulting firm that really knows a lot more about this than either of us. And really the two big reasons are that the traditional media contracts, several of them are expiring around that time. As you know, the Big Ten took a short deal this past cycle with Fox and ESPN. It's a 6-year contract. The Pac-12 deal expires around that time, and the Big 12 deal expires around that time. The second reason might be more important, though, is that those traditional media deals basically won't exist this next cycle, at least in the current form, because there's an expectation that there'll be new players in the marketplace, new technologies that are already entering, you know, sports content distribution. You've seen what Twitter has done with the NFL, and Major League Baseball has some agreements. So I think we'll just have a better sense of how this is going to look around that time, because these conferences are certainly monitoring the landscape and trying to find, you know, new revenue sources as maybe some of the traditional cable distributor or media companies that, you know, that type of money may not be there, the type of money they've received the past few cycles. So those are the big reasons why, and that could be really the next key date for realignment.
What about the grant of rights? The Big 12 was a real leader in this. I think four of the five conferences have it. The SEC does not. I believe they do not have a grant of rights. So how does that figure into this?
Right. So, yeah, no, that's a good question and a good point to make. So basically, the grant of rights and these media agreements are one and the same.
Okay.
What these agreements mean is you're assigning your media rights to the conference until X date. As you mentioned, the SEC does not have one, but the other four conferences, including the three that have deals that expire around that time, do have expiring grant of rights, which would certainly allow for easier movement. The ACC extended its grant of rights all the way out to 2036, so it would be very difficult for any school to leave the ACC for another conference. It doesn't seem like a conference that's in danger of losing members, but you never know how these things turn out. The ACC opted for stability. Other conferences, namely the Big Ten, opted for entering the market very, very soon after its last deal. So, you know, conferences have different strategies, and we'll see which one pays off. But basically, you would have the ability to move around as a member after these media agreements and the grant of rights expire.
The ACC is supposed to be getting its own network, courtesy of ESPN, in 2019. The one conference that won't have a conference network is the Big 12. On the surface, that seems to make them the most vulnerable in this expansion, or the possibility of losing teams. How do you view the Big 12 and in their position, you know, as we look into a crystal ball 6 years from now?
Yeah, you know, it's still an interesting conversation, because I think most people would still say they're the most vulnerable, just in the fact that they're 10 members and they basically hinge on two teams, Texas and Oklahoma. If one of those teams left the conference, I don't think there'd be a Big 12. But they have improved their position, undoubtedly, in the last year or so. They've reported some good revenue numbers, and the fact that if this conference had assigned its third-tier media rights to the individual schools rather than to the league, which some looked at as a weakness in the past, that may end up being a strength, Steve, in the way the market is changing, that, that you hold on to your own media rights. You can distribute some of your content any way you see fit. Now, obviously, Texas has an advantage with the Longhorn Network. Oklahoma makes multiple millions of dollars a year in revenue off of its network. The other schools, their networks or their own distribution platforms are not as profitable. But as the market changes, I think I talked to an ACC athletic director who said it sounded almost envious of the fact that, that the schools have some control of their own rights. So that could end up being an advantage in the long run. Now, the Big 12, can they stay at 10 numbers forever and survive? I think that's hard to say. I think they have to find a way to add membership, to add revenue in the long run. But they do seem to be in a little bit more stable position now than they were, you know, 18 months ago. And they're talking about expansion, and there was some discord within the league.
In fact, in the short term, the Longhorn Network has been seen as a big positive for Texas, but it also has been a bone of contention with the other nine members of the Big 12. I mean, as the story goes about Nebraska, when they were in the Big 12, they knew what the answer would be, but they asked, evidently, Texas at a Big 12 meeting, hey, look, what are you going to do about revenue from Longhorn Network? And they said, we're keeping it. And, of course, you know, and Nebraska knew the answer, and they also knew they were going to go to the Big 10. But long-term, do you think that it has a possibility long-term of being a plus instead of short-term being a conference problem?
Well, you know, I think the other members in the conference realize that if there's no Texas, there's no Big 12. Now, right. Oklahoma is the one to watch. You know, Oklahoma is a major brand, and Oklahoma could go to another conference, whether it's the Pac-12 or the Big 10, I think would be the two that they would look at. So if they're okay with it, and, you know, so far they, you know, they've kind of gone back and forth, but right now they seem happy with the Big 12 situation, then that league might be able to sustain. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that Texas has had some leadership changes. Their president and their athletic director, they'll have a new athletic director by the time this this new agreement rolls around. But they seem to have kind of stabilized their leadership. And also David Boren, who's been the most outspoken president in the conference as far as realignment and what's going on. He's 76 years old. He likely won't be in this position next time around. So those are other things to watch out for. But yeah, I think if you're an Iowa State or you're a Baylor or you're a Kansas State or you're a Texas Tech, you may not have a landing spot in another Power 5 conference. So whether you like Texas's agreement or don't like it, I think you're going to put up with it because you're still pulling in pretty good revenue from the entire conference. I mean, the Big 12 has distributed some really good revenue numbers the last 2 years. They're actually ahead of the Pac-12 and the ACC, I believe, with their last two revenues.
Is Oklahoma, though, in the same boat that Virginia was in with the ACC when Virginia really wasn't exactly thrilled about Virginia Tech coming in? The legislature essentially said, you better vote yes. Is Oklahoma in that spot with Oklahoma State? If you take one, do you have to take both?
Right. You know, that would be a very interesting situation politically in the state, whether Oklahoma would require that. I think we all remember, you know, there was talks about Texas and the Big Ten potentially, and where would that leave Texas Tech? You know, would the Big Ten take Oklahoma? I think so. Would the Big Ten take Oklahoma State? I think it would take a lot of soul searching. And really nothing against Oklahoma State, but academically it's not at the caliber of where the other Big Ten institutions are at this point. So that would be a real discussion point for the folks at Oklahoma. And again, I think that if they feel that they can continue to make money off of their own network, their own third-tier rights, and, you know, just they like the fact they're in the Big 12, travel, you know, for the games is not as difficult as it would be either in the Big 10 or the Pac-12. They might be able to live with it, but I think they are certainly one of the schools to watch, along with Texas, along with some schools in the Pac-12. I mean, let's look at the Pac-12 as well. They're not in a great revenue position right now. Right. And of those leagues that I think is counting on some of these new tech companies to enter the market, I think the Pac-12 is right at the top of the list because their own network has not been overly profitable, right, really at all. And they have some schools that are bleeding money. I mean, Cal right now, their athletic department is reporting significant losses, as are some others in the conference, of high subsidies at Arizona State and so forth. So that's a league that their geography might save them, but right now, I think some of the members in that conference have to be monitoring what's going on elsewhere.
I want to shift gears for one moment, Adam, to the Big Ten. SEC Media Days are going on in Hoover as we speak. The Big Ten will be in a couple of weeks. What are a couple of initial storylines that interest you about the Big Ten season coming up?
Oh, yeah, there's quite a few. I mean, Michigan is going to be interesting because of Harbaugh, but mainly also because of their roster situation. So much turnover. I think they were the, you know, imagine folks where you are, folks at Columbus may disagree, but they may have been the best team in the conference last year. They found a couple games to lose it there at the end, but I think talent-wise, they may have been the best team. They lose a ton of that talent to the NFL, so how do they replace it, especially on the defensive side of the ball? And then I think Penn State is going to be a really interesting team at this event. You know, the Big Ten champion, people still don't talk about them as much as they do Ohio State and Michigan, but they return, you know, arguably the best backfield in the country, and McSorley and Barkley, who coaches around the country tell me is the best back in the country. I don't have any argument with that, but I think there's still a curiosity around Penn State. They rose quickly last year in surprise fashion to win the conference. And are they in position to once again win the conference and get into the college football playoff? I think that's going to be a storyline. And in the West, it's a big mystery after Wisconsin. Wisconsin is the clear favorite in the West, but who's going to challenge them this year on that side? You have Northwestern, which returns quite a lot, but hasn't shown the ability to win the conference, win the division, I should say. Iowa, which won the division a couple of years ago, was very close to an undefeated season. You have Nebraska, which has been, I would say, a major disappointment since entering the conference. Can they rise up? Minnesota won 9 games last year, but they have a coaching change and a major philosophical change to P.J. Fleck. So a lot of questions around the West Division.
Is the P.J. Fleck situation in Minnesota of great interest because of the personality he brings to that job?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, it's a 180 from Tracy Clemons. I think did a really good job. And
yes, he did.
You know, we'll be appreciated more in the coming years, I think. But P.J. could get that thing going. He's going to recruit well. And I think he's a guy who recognizes what he's good at as a head coach, as a CEO, and he recognizes that his staff, he lets them do their job. And I think if they can continue on the track that they were on defensively under Jerry Kill and Tracy Clave, and then improve that offense, mainly the passing game, I think they're a team that they're going to look out for because their talent level should go up mainly because of P.J. Fleck and how he recruits. But I'm very interested to see how his personality sits in Minneapolis. Some think it's the second coming of Tim Brewster, and some think this guy is the one that's going to get them over the top and get them into the Big Ten championship game. I could see either one happening. You talk to coaches who know P.J. or are familiar with him, they think it's going to be one of two outcomes and not in between. So that will be very interesting to watch in the coming season.
Adam, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time. I hope the summer continues to go well for you.
Sounds good. Thanks, Steve.
If you're not insured with the Purdy Insurance Agency, you may not be getting the most out of your insurance coverage. Locally owned and family operated for over 90 years, the experienced team at Purdy will compare your rates and coverage among a number of nationally recognized insurers to make sure you're getting the most out of your insurance dollars. And once you join the Purdy family of customers, you'll experience service and claims handling that's second to none. Call 1-800-677-2478 to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
All right, here are the participants in the Home Run Derby tonight. It means absolutely nothing. It's just going to be, if you love baseball and you like power, you like distance, you'll have fun with it tonight. Giancarlo Stanton going after his second straight Home Run Derby championship. He'll face Gary Sanchez in round one. Last repeat winner was Yoenis Cespedes. The only other repeat winner is Ken Griffey Jr. He has hit 94 career home runs at Marlins Park, 54 more than any other player. ballpark opened in 2012. His average home run distance last year at Petco Field was 446 feet. Aaron Judge is the number two seed. He'll face the Marlins' Justin Bauer in the opening round. Three Yankees have won the Derby: Robinson Cano, Jason Giambi, and Tino Martinez. His longest home run this season, 495 feet. He has never hit a home run at Marlins Park. Cody Bellinger of the Dodgers will face Charlie Blackman in the opening round. No Dodgers ever won it. His longest home run this season, 438 feet, May 5th. He has never hit a home run at Marlins Park. Mike Moustakas of the Royals is the number four seed. No Royals player has ever won it. Longest home run by Moustakas this season, 440 feet on June 20th. He has never hit a home run at Marlins Park. 25 home runs, by the way. The Royals' record in a single season is actually 36 by Steve Balboni in 1985. Miguel Sano of the Minnesota Twins. He'll face Moustakas in the opening round. Justin Morneau of the Twins won this in 2008. Most home runs, first 280 games in his career among Dominican-born players. Pujols, 65. Sano is 64. Manny Ramirez, 55. Charlie Blackman of the Colorado Rockies, the number six seed. He'll face Cody Bellinger. Longest home run this season, 477 feet on July 9th. Two home runs in 14 career games at Marlins Park. Most home runs by a leadoff from the leadoff spot since 2015. Blackman is 66, Brian Dozier 62, George Springer 54, Mookie Betts 54. Justin Bauer of the Marlins is the number seven seed. He has 31 home runs and 169 career games at Marlins Park. His longest home run this year, 437 feet. And Gary Sanchez is the number eight seed. His longest home run this season, 450 feet on June 11th. He has never hit a home run at Marlins Park. Hope you enjoyed it today. More coming up tomorrow. We've got a lot of great guests this week. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com. And from the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
We're your home for news, sports, weather, and your home for the Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.